Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Justice Betrayed by Patricia Bradley, narrated by Joelle Ann Jacob. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, or through the rivers, they will not overflow you. For I am Adonai, your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. Isaiah chapter 43, verses 2 and 3. Prologue. June 1980. Shirley traced her finger over her mother's image in the photo, then shoved the picture into the backpack with her other possessions. Every night, she promised herself she'd leave as soon as her father parked himself in front of All in the Family and fell asleep. A band squeezed her lungs, making it impossible to breathe. "You do it tonight." She clenched her jaw. It wasn't that she wanted to stay, but what if he came after her and found her? Or what if the law found her? She was only 15, and they would drag her back to him. After all, they'd bought her father's story that her mom had fallen down the basement steps as she carried a basket of clothes to the washer. If the sheriff suspected her father had pushed his wife, he'd kept it to himself. No one wanted to get on the bad side of Big Al in their small community, not even the law. She flinched as the back screen slapped against the doorframe.
"Shirley! Shirley Irene, I'm hungry. Get supper on the table."
Shirley shoved the backpack under her bed and hurried to the kitchen, stopping at the doorway to take a deep breath.
"Evening," she mumbled.
He ignored her and turned on the television. The actor Ronald Reagan filled the screen in one of his election ads, and he snapped the set off.
"Washington's never going to stop spending our money," her father muttered.
Then he turned and laid his John Deere cap on the red formica table. Shirley wanted to snatch the dirty thing off the table her mother had been so proud to get from a neighbor after she updated her kitchen. She sidestepped past him to the avocado green refrigerator to take out a package of pork chops. The sour odor of beer and sweat made her want to gag.
"Where were you this afternoon?"
She averted her eyes.
"The teacher asked me to stay and help with cleaning up."
"Look at me when I ask you a question."
Shirley pulled her gaze past the beer gut hanging over his belt to his ruddy face and dead brown eyes.
"That's better. You aren't worth anything to me helping somebody else. I needed you to help load logs. Next time you tell her you have other jobs to do."
"Yes, sir,"
she said, rubbing her thumbs over the calluses on her fingers. He worked her like a mule.
"Now get supper on the table."
Shirley grabbed an apron and tied it around her waist. At the sink, she scrubbed her hands with the pumice stone until they were almost raw. Green sink, green stove, green refrigerator. She hated green. Her heart leaped into her throat as her gaze settled on the straight razor on the counter and then traveled to the leather strap hanging on the wall. She'd forgotten to sharpen his razor. That meant another beating if she didn't get it done before morning. Or maybe not. She wouldn't be here by then. She would be gone. With her spirits lighter, she lit the fire under the pot of beans and set a skillet on another burner and fried the pork chops, not even minding when the grease popped out, burning her arm. In 20 minutes, she had supper on the table and held her breath as he tasted the food.
"Girl, can't you do anything right? You got the beans too salty."
He shoved away from the table and stood. Her heart plummeted. But this time she wasn't going to take it.
"You're not going to beat me again."
"I wouldn't have to if you didn't mess up all the time."
He yanked the leather strap from the wall and marched toward her.
"Any 15-year-old should be able to cook a simple meal without ruining it."
"I won't do it again."
She backed up against the sink.
"This is to make sure you don't."
She screamed as the strap came down and barely turned in time to protect her face as the strap stung her back.
"I told you not to scream. Now you've gone and done it, and I have to correct you again. Turn around and face me.
No.
The straight razor lay on the counter waiting for her to sharpen it. She grabbed it.
You always say that.
His fingers closed on her shoulder, and he yanked her back. She came around swinging the knife at his throat. Blood spurted from his neck. He grabbed his throat and staggered back.
What have you done, girl? Call an ambulance.
With every heartbeat came more blood.
No.
He'd beat her for sure if he lived. Shirley sucked in air.
You shouldn't have made me do it.
Girl, I'm sorry.
His breath came shorter.
I won't do it again. Now call that ambulance.
She pressed her fingers against her mouth. He couldn't die here. The law might not believe her.
I'll drive you to the hospital.
You better hope I don't die.
His voice grew weaker.
Haunt you. Never get away from me.
Can he do that? No. When you're dead, you're dead.
He grasped her wrist.
Help me.
Blood dripped onto her hair as she half supported and half dragged him through the door.
You've got to help me,
she said through gritted teeth. Shirley didn't know if he heard her or not. Then he got his feet under him, barely lightening her load.
Good,
she said with a grunt. For once, she was glad of the man's work he'd forced her to do. They stumbled once in the pitch dark of the moonless night, but finally made it to the old pickup. Once she had him inside the cab, he leaned against the door, and Shirley drove toward town. They'd just reached the tavern he'd just come from, when death rattled in his chest. A quarter of a mile past the tavern, she pulled over on the shoulder of the road and stopped. The dim light of the dashboard revealed his chest no longer rose and fell as his breathing became shallower. When he took his last breath, she rested her head against the back of the seat. He was beyond hurting her ever again. This wasn't her fault.
You shouldn't have made me do it, she said softly.
She couldn't leave him here like this, though. Shirley angled the pickup toward the deep ravine on the side of the road. Then she pulled his body into the driver's seat. After wiping the steering wheel clean, she put the truck in neutral. Then she climbed out of the pickup. Slowly, it inched toward the ravine, picking up speed until it shot down the steep grade. Shirley ran like the hound of the pit was after her. The explosion happened just as she got past the tavern. She looked over her shoulder as a ball of fire rose from the trees. For the first time in her life, she drew a free breath. 1. August 2017.
Elvis is in the building, and he wants to see you.
Homicide Detective Rachel Sloan stared at the screen on her phone and then glanced at the clock. 4:55 on Friday afternoon was no time to joke around about the possibility of staying late. She frowned and rolled her chair so she could see around the partition that boxed her in. Her heart sank at the sight of an aging Elvis lookalike in a white sequined jumpsuit standing at the office manager Donna Dumont's desk, talking to one of the sergeants in homicide. The middle of August in Memphis meant Elvis Week and a city full of Elvis wannabes. But why did one of them want to see her? And where was Donna? She rolled back to the desk she'd just cleared off for the weekend and dialed the number on the text.
What does he want? He won't say, just that he needs to see you,
the detective said. He called me by name? She slipped off the heel she'd worn for the court appearance earlier in the afternoon. It had been the DA's idea for her to wear the heels with a knee-length skirt and white blouse under her suit jacket. He'd said it would make her look professional, but the two male jurors ogling her hadn't escaped her attention.
Yes, he actually asked for Detective Rachel Winslow Sloan. Oh, and his name is Vic Vegas.
You're kidding,
She wiggled her toes. Tell him to give me 5 minutes, she muttered, and glanced toward the cubicle across the aisle. Her gaze collided with Lieutenant Boone Callahan's dark brown eyes as he stood in his doorway. The air between them crackled with electricity, and Rachel quickly dropped her gaze. She thought he'd left for the day. No, she'd hoped he'd left. She and Boone had gone out a few times before she joined the homicide division, but then she broke it off with him. Since then, they'd mostly avoided each other, him working the shift opposite hers. Until this week.
Do you need something?
His rich baritone sent shivers down her arms.
No, I thought you'd left for the gym.
Gym?
Yeah, getting ready for tomorrow's competition.
He was determined to beat her time, but that had never happened, and wasn't happening tomorrow either. Rachel had inherited her father's competitive gene, a trait that had surfaced before kindergarten. Even as a 4-year-old, she had to be the best dancer. Then in school, she went after the top honors. And athletically, she pushed herself, practicing until she was the top player, no matter the sport. That hadn't changed when she became a cop, and tomorrow would be no different.
I'm ready for you, he said with a slow smile. Tomorrow, I'm taking that trophy.
Not happening, Boone.
She tried to ignore the way her heart beat against her ribcage like a bird trying to escape.
Don't count your chickens before they hatch.
He nodded.
See you tomorrow.
You're the one with the bad math,
she called after him. Her shoulders slumped as he turned the corner. If her heart kept whacking out every time he spoke to her, it would be impossible to work the same days as Boone. But there was nothing she could do about it. She was on loan from burglary and had no seniority. And it was clear she still had feelings for him. But he was her supervisor now. As long as she was in homicide, there could be no relationship. It was against the rules. She'd known that when she transferred in. She waited until she was certain Boone had left, then walked up to the front entrance where Vic Vegas waited.
Miss Rachel?
The man asked, a questioning smile on his full lips. Then he nodded and hooked his thumbs in the huge rhinestone belt encircling his ample waist.
Yes, we can talk at my desk.
Once they were in her cubicle, he said,
The last time I saw you, you reminded me of a colt, all legs and trying to get your feet under you. I understand you married and that your husband died. So much tragedy in your life. I'm sorry.
A chill shivered down her spine. How did he know so much about her? She didn't remember ever seeing this man before in her life. The creepiness factor even overshadowed the usual lead weight of guilt that settled in her stomach when Corey was mentioned.
Do I know you?
His shoulders drooped.
You don't remember me?
She studied him. A faint memory tickled her brain. Her mom, with an Elvis lookalike on either side of her. One of them had called her Miss Rachel.
Maybe. It was a long time ago.
17 years,
he said.
A charity event, she replied, still searching her memory bank. An Elvis tribute affair.
That's right. For St. Jude. It was a competition at the convention center. I'm on my way now to one being held at Blues and such tonight.
Rachel sneaked a peek at her watch. How can I help you? He indicated a chair beside her desk.
May I sit?
She mustered a smile. The day had just gotten longer.
Of course.
He settled in the straight-backed chair and arranged the white cape attached to his jumpsuit so that it didn't wrinkle. Then he took a photo from his shirt pocket and handed it to her.
This was taken the last time I saw you.
Rachel stilled. Her fingers shook as she examined the picture. 4 Elvis impersonators stood beside her mother and Rachel, who was presenting a trophy to the winner. She remembered exactly when the photo was taken, because later that night, her mother had died. The gala was the last thing they had done together. She swallowed. Her entire life had changed the night her mother was murdered. She'd been pushing memories of that night away for the past week.
Focus.
Trying not to look at her mother, Rachel studied the men in the photo. It took a second look to recognize that the man standing next to the winner was the one sitting across from her. He appeared to be in his late 30s in the photo, but the intervening years had not been kind to Vic Vegas. 17 years would only put him in his mid-50s, but he looked older. Maybe it was the jet-black pompadour and long sideburns, or the 40 pounds he'd added. She lifted her gaze. I'm not sure I understand.
It's the last time we were all together. I've written everyone's name on the back, he said.
She tried again. I still don't understand.
A few nights after this was taken, Harrison Fox was murdered. He's the one you're handing the trophy to. His murder has never been solved.
Memory scratched at the back of her mind. And you want me to solve it? Rachel had enough cases without adding another one, particularly one that delved into her past. This is a cold case, and I don't work cold cases. She started to hand him the photo. Wait, did you say Harrison Fox? The memory finally surfaced, though it was cloudy. He was her mother's friend, and somehow her father was involved, but it was all jumbled in her mind. Why are you bringing this to the police now?
I brought it to the attention of the police last year, and they didn't do anything about it. This week marks 17 years since he was murdered. It's time somebody paid for what they did.
Rachel felt there was more. He held himself too rigid, and when she didn't comment right away, he shifted in the chair. Is that the only reason? Vic swallowed and moistened his lips.
I may be in over my head. I think someone broke into my house last night, and my gut says they were looking for information about Harrison's murder.
Why would anyone be looking at your house for information on his murder? He hesitated.
You'll think I'm crazy. My daughter does. For years, I've been trying to solve Harrison's murder. But this last month, I really got into it. I've been calling around and asking questions of people we knew back then. Even followed up and went to see a few of them. I think I asked the wrong person the wrong question.
Joy. An Elvis impersonator and an amateur sleuth. It was her lucky day. Are you saying that generally, or are you talking about a specific person?
I don't have enough proof to call any names. Just the same gut feeling I had 17 years ago.
This break-in, did you report it? He shook his head.
I couldn't find anything missing.
Oh boy, this was sounding stranger and stranger. Maybe his daughter was right. Vic obviously believed what he was saying. She doodled on her desk calendar. So, why bring it to me? We have an excellent cold case unit.
They're the ones I took it to last year, and they said there were a lot of cases ahead of this one and they'd contact me. So far, no one has. I thought the case might be personal to you since he was a friend of your mother.
She had no recollection of Fox being murdered, but if it had happened around the time of her mother's funeral, it was no wonder. Grief and anger had consumed Rachel then. While the grief had lessened over the years, the anger remained hot as ever. Vic's intense gaze held hers. The cases already on her workload hung in the back of her mind. Maybe a quick look at the cold case file would provide information that would satisfy him that everything had been done to find Fox's killer. Either way, she had to fill out a report. So she took out a notepad and one of the mechanical pencils she liked to use to write her notes, made erasing easier. I don't suppose Vic Vegas is your legal name? He grinned and ducked his head, much like she'd seen Elvis do in film clips.
Actually, it is. I had it legally changed in 95. It was less confusing.
Okay. Give me your original name for the records. She wrote Philip Grant on the pad, as well as the stage name, then asked for his contact information. After he gave it to her, she tilted her head toward him. I'll talk with someone in the cold case unit Monday, and hope Sergeant Brad Hollister didn't laugh her out of his office.
Would you like my files on the murder?
Vic asked.
Files?
He nodded, raising his eyebrows.
I typed up everything, the people I've talked to in person or on the phone, what I learned, everything, and put the notes into files.
You have a list of people you've questioned? That might save time if anything in the cold case files warranted a second look at the case. He nodded.
I even talked to your dad.
That was bound to have gone over like a ton of chicken feathers with the judge. Why would you talk with my father?
He represented Harrison in a legal matter a year or two before Harrison died, and he was there the night of the contest.
She caught her breath. Vic was right. An image of her dad in the audience flashed in her mind. She'd been surprised that he had attended the charity event, because he and her mother had been separated for about a month then. If Vic hadn't mentioned it, she probably never would have remembered it. To her knowledge, it was the only time he attended anything Elvis. Her dad thought all the hoopla around Elvis Week was ridiculous, which never sat well with her mom, since she'd been one of Elvis's biggest fans. Do you have the files with you? Rachel doubted Vic had uncovered anything worthwhile, but the cold case unit might be interested.
Afraid not, he said. Stopping here was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing, and I don't have time to go get them before the competition starts.
Surely he wasn't competing in the contest. Her question must have shown on her face because he held up his hand.
Don't worry, I'm not competing. They're honoring a bunch of us old geezers, he said. But I can bring the files to you tomorrow.
She handed him her business card. Monday will be fine. I won't be able to get access to the cold case files before then. And if I'm not here, just leave them with our office manager up front. Vic's shoulders dipped, and a small sigh escaped his lips.
Sure.
He hefted his body from the chair, offering her his hand.
I really appreciate you looking into this. I'd really like to see Harrison's murder solved.
She slipped on her heels and stood, accepting his hand. Don't thank me just yet. I haven't done anything.
But you will. I checked up on you, and when you take a case, you don't quit until it's solved.
I've been told I'm stubborn. His praise pinched her conscience. She saw no way of spending more than a couple of hours on the case. Why don't I walk out with you? At the door, Vic glanced around at the empty room.
It looks like I've kept you past quitting time. Sorry.
No worries. At the elevator, she pushed the down button before turning to Vic. So how long have you been an Elvis impersonator?
I've been an Elvis tribute artist for 30 years, he said. Ever since I sang Peace in the Valley at a church talent show. Dyed my hair and grew my sideburns.
The elevator door slid open, and they stepped inside.
I don't compete anymore. Just show up with a few others from back in the day to remind the younger ones we were some of the first to give tribute to the king.
They rode in silence to the first floor.
Thanks again for agreeing to help me,
he said as they stepped out of the elevator. She tried to think of something to say that would keep him from getting his hopes up. Cold cases like this are really hard to solve, and I don't have much time to devote to working on it. She warmed under his intense gaze. He knew she wasn't going to dig very deep.
What if I told you Harrison's murder is connected to your mother's death?
Her heart almost stopped.
That's impossible.
Doesn't it strike you as strange that your mother dies in a burglary that's never been solved, and Harrison is murdered 3 days later?
Every word of the crime report was imprinted on her mind. The short version was that there had been a rash of burglaries in their neighborhood, and her mother had apparently surprised a burglar in their home, and had either fallen or been pushed when she confronted the unknown subject or subjects.
Believe me, she said, I've looked at every angle, and even though no one has been caught, the evidence all points to my mother's death being the result of a burglary gone bad. There were other break-ins around the neighborhood. Nothing suggests that her death was anything other than that.
But what if the evidence was wrong?
He asked.
All the break-ins in your neighborhood were attributed to the cleaning service ring that was arrested not long after Gabby was killed, but they never admitted to the job at your house.
How do you know that?
I reviewed the court case and talked to a couple of the people arrested. They denied your house was ever a target.
Of course they'd say that. They don't want to serve time for murder.
But he'd done his homework. There might actually be something in those files he talked about. His gaze was unwavering. Vic Vegas was much smarter than she'd given him credit for. He'd known he would hook her by tying her mother's case to Fox's. But what if he did have something?
She was off tomorrow and had two morning events inked on her calendar. Maybe she could meet him here between them.
Can you bring your files by here tomorrow morning? Say 10:30?
Shirley stared at the front of the Criminal Justice Center building as Vegas stepped through the glass doors of the CJC. It had been nothing but dumb luck when she saw him enter the building.
Okay, Vic, I've about reached my limit with you.
She spoke the words aloud, even though there was no one to hear them inside the car. Click. The zoom lens of the camera captured the Elvis wannabe and Detective Rachel Sloan standing beside him. Not good. Not good at all. Should have done something about Vegas when he called, snooping around again. Another click captured a close-up of the detective, and further examination brought an unexpected visceral punch in her gut. In the photo, Rachel bore a strong resemblance to her dead mother. Same color honey blonde hair framing an oval face, same hazel eyes, and while Rachel's lithe frame and long legs were more athletic, her stance was like her mother's. And like Gabby, she was too beautiful for her own good. No telling what Vic had been filling the detective's head with.
Just don't take the bait, Detective Sloan, unless you want to end up like your mother.
2. As Rachel walked across Washington Street to the parking garage, Vic Vegas's question triggered emotion she thought she'd buried. She'd made two decisions that haunted her in life. The first was the night her mother was killed. Rachel had fuzzy memories of leaving her mom and spending the night at a friend's house. While her mother had gone home and surprised a burglar, Rachel spent the night having fun. Her jaw clenched. It didn't matter that she'd been only 15, and it was improbable that she could have done anything to stop what happened. Rachel should have been there. She knew it, and her father knew it. Sometimes she believed he blamed her. Why else would he have been so distant after it happened? Her father, Judge Lucien Winslow. He could have stopped what happened if he'd been there. Pain shot from her jaw to her temple. Ancient history. But if she could solve the crime she'd switched careers for, her mother would have justice. She slid across the front seat of her ancient Honda Civic and turned the key. Two clicks, and then nothing. Except a punch of adrenaline in her veins. She did not need a dead battery today. She tried it again and smiled as the motor came to life. After supper with the judge, she'd stop in at the parts place she frequented and buy a new battery. Something else to add to her schedule. 15 minutes later, Rachel pulled into the gym parking lot, where Donna stood beside her red Mustang. Like Rachel, she hadn't taken the time to change out of
Sample complete. Ready to continue?